Dimer's program's been around for about 10 years. It's been, the implementation activity began about 5 years ago because there was a lot of build-up from a requirement standpoint to get the program going. The whole idea is we still need to improve our ability to provide timely and accurate pay for our soldiers and to be able to account for our soldiers. Who are they? Where are they? What skills do they have? So there's a personnel side to it. There's a pay side to it. But it's PERS pay integrated. That's really the key. In the past, well, today, our personnel actions drive pay, your entitlements that Congress provides for soldiers who are in certain categories or where they're located. Those personnel actions change your pay. And we had significant disconnects and lag between the personnel systems and the pay systems. And so a lot of times pay would be wrong, and that's unacceptable for our soldiers. And so the whole idea of Dimer's was really to do a lot of things, but really to do two things. To integrate personnel and pay so we get those personnel entitlements driving pay timely and accurately. And to be able to have visibility at an enterprise level of the personnel data so our commanders, the people who work across the military departments, have better visibility to who's out there, what skills they have, etc. So that was the whole premise. It is very hard to do. It is the single largest human resources implementation of IT ever attempted in the world. And that has been among our biggest problems. And that's not necessarily from a technology standpoint. The technology is pretty flexible. The technology is pretty robust. But that is a very complicated set of business rules and business practices that for decades have grown up different between the Army, Navy, and Air Force, and between the active guard and reserve within the Army, Navy, Air Force. And so the challenge has been, from a governance and change management standpoint, to get enough commonality of decisions so that we can lock down what we're trying to build. And what we have found, both in extensive reviews of the program in 2005 and again another extensive review, independent review of the program in 2008, that the change management and governance across something so vast and so complicated has been overwhelming to the program. And so that's why we got some redirection from the program this past January, really to try to accomplish the same objective, but do it in a different way that maybe would not be so onerous from a change management standpoint. And that's where we are.
You say redirection in January. What happened in January? Was it a memo? I've heard that the program is going to be taken over by the Army and the Air Force. So it's going to leave BTA. Talk about what the plan is.
The independent review that took place last September, October, November, with sort of decision briefs in December, culminated in a memo from the previous Deputy Secretary, Gordon England, on January 16th. That provided new direction to the program. Meet the same objective. We need to do integrated PERS pay, and we need to aggregate data from across the military departments so that we have this enterprise view of our personnel. But can we accomplish that objective without a one-size-fits-all piece of information technology? And that's the direction that we're heading down, is not to do it with a one-size-fits-all piece of information technology. There is a common element of Dimer's that's about 65 to 70% of the original requirements that everyone has agreed, and we know this because we voted requirement by requirement, 5,000 requirements that we went through with the military departments and said, you guys tell us, what can we agree is common requirements for all of us? And it came out to be about 65% of the total. What the deputy directed us to do, the previous DEPSEC, was to complete Dimer's core, which is those 65% of the total requirements, and then call CORE complete, and then give CORE to the military departments. And then they will build out their service unique capability, do their own change management, do their own training and deployments, but based on the goodness that we've already created, as well as the completion of the CORE. Now, the other question, of course, is, well, how much CORE is done? Well, the good news is about 80% of the core had already been tested. So again, you do the percents, you got 65% of the total, 80% of that already done. You now have a very focused element of stuff that needs to be completed for core, which is what we're doing right now and have been doing really since the beginning of February based on the new guidance, and that we're scheduled to complete around the end of the fiscal year. At that point, that common piece of Dimer's will be done. and we will hand it off to the military departments where they will pick it up. They're standing up their own acquisition efforts to be able to then drive to completion based on their service unique pieces, where they're going to have their own change management challenges, just even within their own services to be able to do. But we feel that that's a more flexible and realistic option of still getting to where we need to be, but getting something deployed and out the door.
BTA will continue to develop that core, lead that effort. And then once that core is completed, you'll send it off to each of the services. How is that going to give you, not necessarily a centralized system, but to be able to get data from DoD-wide perspective?
BTA's role is sort of a status quo, as is role through the completion of CORE. We have the program management office, and it's our responsibility to complete that piece of the acquisition. At that point, that role transitions to the services. At the same time, though, because that and as we said, there were two main things, integrated PERS pay. We can do integrated PERS pay at the service level and still get the pay accuracy that we're driving for. The question then becomes the other issue, aggregation of data. How do we get that enterprise view for OSD, for the combatant commanders, the people who have to deal with a multi-service environment? And so the role for BTA in that sense will continue. As part of the deputy's direction and based on, you know, the recommendation from BTA and the others, is we still need an information repository that pulls together, that aggregates data from across the multiple dimers, if you will. And those requirements are to meet the information visibility requirements of OSD and the COCOMs. BTA has been tasked really under the deputy chief management officer role in OSD, who has the mantra from the DepSec to go oversee this task to BTA to help implement, is to design and architect that information warehouse solution and may ensure that that is built according to that architecture and that that is operational based on the feeds of information that will come from the service dimers. Now, whether we run that system or not, I mean, DMDC, which is part of the Personnel and Readiness Organization, already does a lot of data warehousing information in the personnel community. And so we're likely to partner with them to leverage some of the data warehouse capabilities they already provide and enhance it to be compatible with the DIMER's architecture to be able to leverage existing technology rather than to build something completely new for a warehousing capability. But that is part of a more ongoing BTA role, is to ensure that the enterprise architecture for the information aggregation across the enterprise is defined well and then executed well, while the components are actually off building and delivering the DIMER's solutions at the service level.
Is this data warehouse something that you're going to go out and get a contract for? Does it kind of exist in DMDC? You just have to expand the capabilities, or are you not quite there to know what the plan is yet?
So the analysis is ongoing. Our strong belief is that we'll be able to leverage existing capability. Now, there was a warehouse already planned for DIMERS. And so one of the things, we're looking at the things that were already in scope. And every time the folks come to brief me on this, I always come back to that same question. Are we leveraging the stuff that was already in scope? I don't want to build new if I don't have to. And so between the existing DIMERS data warehouse that was in the works and the DMDC enterprise capability that already exists, our current analysis indicates that we can leverage that almost to the complete solution. The key to all this that we absolutely have to get right is sort of before the warehouse, what's the data standards and architecture that the warehouse will be built upon? And when you were all going to be in one DIMERS, you didn't have to worry as much about architecture because the system was the architecture. I mean, it's sort of by definition, you have one system, you have a standard. Well, now as we disaggregate and we might have three or four DIMERS solutions and there's going to be more flexibility, we need to make sure that data dictionary and architecture standpoint is rock solid and deployed in the same way across those DIMERS solutions, so that when we try to aggregate information, we don't have this big mismatch. So part of what we're doing is ensuring that we do have a warehouse environment that we can feed data to, but another piece is making sure that the standards and dictionary are going to be codified sufficiently that they can then be deployed effectively and in a standard way in the individual dimers, or else our headache for warehousing is going to go way, way up. So it's twofold of what we're trying to do, but all within the existing capability. We really don't think we need to go out and buy any new capability to do this. We just, again, need to do things a little differently with a little bit more rigor and discipline to make sure we get it right across the multiple platforms.
I want to go back to that 65% core that we talked about. My understanding is that, yes, you, as you said, 80% of that 65% is finished.
Right.
But is that the last 20% the hardest?
Yeah.
Because my understanding is that there was one point where Dimers, and I'm not sure if this is still the case, but Dimers was taking a year to process what should take 24 hours or some, maybe that's not quite accurate in terms of the data, but something where it was taking way too much time to process data that should be processed every day.
So there are two questions and I'll touch on them both. We absolutely had a significant roadblock in processing time when it came to our interface strategy that was developed with our contracting partners. And it was for two reasons. One, a lot of what we were trying to test out, again, on a size and scale that nobody's ever done before, we had a production-like environment and we had a coop environment. Coop environment is not the same as the production environment. It's for emergency purposes, so it's a scaled-down environment. And we were doing some of this load testing in the coop environment because of some availability issues, and that was dragging us down. The real thing that was dragging us down, though, was the interface architecture strategy. And so what we did about 6 months ago is we actually brought in a different company that specializes in this, a company called Ab Initio. They do phenomenal work. And this is the world in which they live in, is extraordinarily large scale with some of the biggest global companies out there of large scale mammoth integration, moving tons and tons of data. And within about 3 months, they had re-architected the high problem interfaces that were taking, you know, literally out thousands of hours, and had slashed them down into the, you know, the 1 hour range or the 2 hour range. And so we had an environment issue, more so we had an interface architecture issue that we were all very frustrated by, and we went back and looked and said, is there a better way? We brought in a different company, has a different capability, and we were able to dramatically change that. So that piece, I would say everyone would pretty much agree, is solved, the throughput issue. Interfaces are still a challenge, though, because, again, you're mapping data from sort of this new COTS ERP environment to, you know, really old legacy personnel systems that are proliferated throughout the department, and getting all that mapping right and having a data element mapped to a data element accurately is still hard. And that's where some of that, you know, extra, that 20% of work needs to be done, is on some of that hard stuff. Now, I would say the hardest stuff is in the non-core piece, that 35% of the total, if people can follow the percentages. That's probably the hardest. But of the piece of core that's left, you know, that stuff is not done, absolutely. And we've said pretty openly that is some of that stuff is harder than the stuff that's already tested, which is why it's going to take us, you know, about 8 months or so of dedicated work on trying to complete core. The rest of core, maybe 20% of that element, sounds like a small number. It's the hard part. We agree. And part of that is interfaces, and part of it is core configuration. But by focusing the effort just on that and not focusing on the other stuff, where a lot of the arguments were about requirements and is it this way or that way, and the active versus the guard versus the Army versus the Air Force, we've eliminated a lot of that frustrating dialogue to at least focus on the stuff that we're all in agreement on from a requirement standpoint, which I think is helping us to make, you know, good progress on getting that piece completed.
So if I'm a member of the Army, if I'm a member of one of the services, when will Dimers affect me? And it may be up to the Army, the Air Force may be up to each of the services, but do you have any plans? I remember working on a story a number of months ago, maybe even a year ago by now, that said the Army was going to be the first one to really roll out Dimers. Is that still the plan, or because of the change in how you view Dimers, it's going to, each service will have their own schedule, and still maybe a year, two, three before the average person sees the benefits?
Well, since the Deputy Secretary asked me the same question just yesterday, the question is certainly fresh in my mind. And partly the answer is we don't know yet. But we will know soon. Secretary Lin, who has now, of course, taken over into that role, has provided direction on a timeline for this summer to have very specific things answered relative to the question you're asking. And it really, the reason we can't answer the question now is it's not an enterprise rollout anymore. It's a component-specific rollout. And each military department needs to decide the best way to roll out the capability. Now, they're readdressing the questions. Do they want to do a big bang where all of the Army, for example, goes live on its version of Dimers on one day, or do they want to roll it out in phases? So we might have a initial rollout date, which would be different from the full operating capability date. And the military departments are still, I don't want to say struggling with that, but rationalizing that, analyzing that, and trying to come up with if core, the premise is core is done, given to them toward the end, around the end of the fiscal year. Based on that assumption and the requirements for each service, which are now going to be different beyond core, how long is it going to take them to deliver those capabilities, and in what phasing will they deliver those capabilities? Could they have some capability out the door within another 12 months? I think yes. But that's based on their strategy. Will they have all of it for their military department done in 12 months? Likely not. So do they want to wait a little longer and do more at once? Or do they want to go in shorter chunks and get something out early and build on it? That no longer is really an enterprise decision. It's a military department decision. And they've really been tasked to come back and give those answers sometime this summer, long before they actually get the capability. But we just don't have that answer today.
I remember that the Army was the first to roll out, but the Navy was very hesitant. And they've even said at one point, we may not use Dimers. Are they still going to use it? Are they back on board?
Well, so part of the decision points that will take place this summer, and there was, again, a lot of analytics involved in this with OSD and the military departments over the last several months. This change in direction did not come around lightly. And many stakeholders, all stakeholders, had a lot of very senior presence in input into the decisions. The Navy, to date, has been a bit of an outlier in Dimers. The Marine Corps part of the Department of the Navy has always been an outlier because they have a system called MCTIFS, the Marine Corps Total Force System or Solution, that does provide the Marine Corps integrated personnel and pay, unlike the rest of the military departments who don't have that capability. They're using other systems, much older and much less reliable. And so there has been always a discussion with the Navy about whether or not it's better to build on Dimers or to leverage the MCTIFS solution to deliver capability. And right now it's just they need to decide. And they need to decide not independently, because there's actually some statutory language that restricts their ability to build out a MCTIFS solution without Deputy Secretary signed approval, as well as there's some GAO approvals and other congressional things. So it's not a low bar. It's actually a fairly high bar for them to deviate from Dimers. That being said, they are, just like everyone, looking at a business case, going to come due in the same summer timeframe when all these decisions are hopefully finalized, of whether or not, if they're going to go to a separate solution from the Army and Air Force, is building on Dimers Corps the right answer? Or is building on MCTIFS the right answer? The presumption of the previous DepSec memo is that Dimers is the right answer. But part of the business case is to really look at that from an objective standpoint and say, here's why the answer should be X or Y. The point, I think, all of us now who have been through this for so long, everyone just needs to decide, and we need to move on, and we need to move on before we get to the completion of CORE, which we know is coming. So if it's June or July, which is sort of the time frame that the Secretary Lin has given, he wants all that information pulled together, and let's make that final decision. I want to see the component schedules for rollout, and I want to know with the Navy, is it going to be based on Dimers or MCTIFS, and if it's going to be other than Dimers, you kind of need to convince us that really is the right thing to do. So I think in the summer timeframe is when we're going to see all those answers finally come to the table.
The other thing that kind of occurred to me as you were describing how Dimers will potentially work now is cost. This was a big project anyways. This was hundreds of millions of dollars, if not into the billions. By breaking it out to each service component, is that going to – do we have any cost estimates in terms of whether it's going to cost the same, less, more?
All part of the stuff that's going to be analyzed now that will come back out of the business case analysis in the summer. We have to take that out of a theoretical argument and make it a very practical discussion. From a theoretical standpoint, one size fits all is always cheaper. It always is. But one size fits all rarely works. So that's the difference between theory and practice. Industry has found this over and over again, and we have looked at the Fortune 100 companies and what do they do with their mammoth ERP kinds of implementations. None of them do one size fits all. Because one size fits all from a change management, a strategic alignment, all those things that are necessary to make IT work don't exist one size fits all. We don't have one size fits all things in large companies. They have multiple. Now again, theoretically, wouldn't it be great if we could all decide to do everything one way? Well, yeah, that would be great, and it would probably be less expensive. But here we're talking about a $600 billion enterprise on the order of that is incredibly varied across the military departments, the defense agencies, and all the other things that we do. Is it reasonable to have one size fits all? So then you have to back off and say, if one size fits all isn't the right answer, how many should we have? Should we have 5? Should we have 10? Should we have 1,000? I mean, clearly there's a cost benefit in there somewhere. What can we get deployed and implemented? Around what group of capabilities and constituents can we build enough strategic alignment to reasonably pour our energy and say that's the right number? That's part of what we're trying to answer here. So if it's not 1 and it's not 50, is it 3? Is it 5? Is it 4? What's the right number and what's the right communities around which we can build that appropriate strategic alignment that we honestly believe we can deploy capability? And so the visceral reaction of, okay, we're going to break it up and have cost go way, way up because some work will be duplicative. There may be some duplicative work, but it's also maybe much more likely that we're going to deploy the capability by doing so. So the sort of the theory around one size fits all being less expensive, well, I think we've proven, frankly, that one size fits all isn't less expensive if it takes this long and you're still not deployed. At some point, we have to say, are we doing the wrong thing to deliver capability and make a good, tough management decision and say, you know what, maybe we need to do this differently. And I think that's what we're doing.
I know we're almost out of time. So I do want to ask you step away from Dimers for a second and ask you, how has this experience with Dimers affected BTA at large?
So BTA does two fundamental things, systems being one of them, and that's about half of what we do. That piece we always sort of question. What systems should be done at the enterprise level? Enterprise systems, again, in a corporation, in a military organization, whatever it may be, is very, very hard. Because by definition, if you're doing enterprise capability, you got to get a lot of people to buy in to the business practices that you're trying to deploy. And that's hard to do. It's why most companies don't do transactional systems at the corporate level. They do usually information, you know, repositories, data warehouses, those kinds of systems at the corporate level. And they do transaction systems down in their business units, if you will. We in the Department of Defense have built a number of enterprise systems because our components didn't have capability to do so. They didn't have a contract writing system that worked well. They didn't have a travel system that worked well. And so it made a lot of sense to build that unique capability at an enterprise level. But we're constantly evaluating that. As the military departments deliver more capability in their ERP systems, in their large-scale transformation efforts, if they can better integrate and align to capability in the military department, and we can still get the information we need at the enterprise level, I'm very open to saying, well, maybe that capability should devolve at the enterprise level down to the components. Size and scale is one reason, but also sort of that integration, that alignment factor that can occur more likely in a large business unit, to use the corporate term, may be a better answer as long as we do it based on enterprise standards and we can aggregate information. I mean, there's a real pull and tugging that kind of goes back and forth as to what the right answer is. The things that we have built at the enterprise level that BTA has inherited and has continued to augment and implement and sustain are capabilities that largely have never existed within our components at an adequate level. If they can do it, and they can do it based on standards, and they can do it in a better way, then maybe there is a good business case to be made that that's where it should be done. And BTA is very open to that dialogue because our role is to make sure capability is being delivered and information is still aggregated and available. So we can't break the information requirement for corporate, but for transaction standpoint, maybe there are some systems and capabilities that should be at the component level. Now, that doesn't mitigate a lot of the other things that BTA does from a requirement standpoint, architecture standpoint, investment review, some of the other guidance work that we do from a best practice standpoint in helping our military departments do things. So there's about half of what we do is that other element that I don't really see changing. But our portfolio on systems could very well change based on the capabilities that the military departments can deploy, but we got to look at them one by one to make sure that we're not missing something and we're not doing a trade-off that's going to be counterproductive.
As it seems to me, then potentially things could change, but there's no plans. There's maybe not even a lot of discussion about that.
Actually, I would disagree. There's been a fair amount of discussion on some of our programs in particular that currently are done at the enterprise level that I would argue should not be. And those capabilities to make that shift to the military departments is going to largely be based on the ability of the military departments to deploy that capability. And so if they have bought packages that they're trying to implement that currently they're being forced to integrate with our enterprise systems, if they can demonstrate that they can do that capability in the packages that they've bought rather than interface to the enterprise systems, that's probably a better answer. And we're actually talking a lot about that right now.
Can you give us any heads up on what those systems maybe are?
The space that we're focused on is the business process around procure to pay. Our contract writing, our engagement with industry for receipts and invoices, our entitlement systems, our accounts payable piece. Right now, we're implementing systems in the military departments that can perform many of those functions. But right now they're not performing those functions because there are policies that say we need to integrate with the enterprise. I hate integration. Hate it. Interfaces are evil, if you ask me. And the department and the federal government and industry has proven over and over again they're inordinately expensive and they're unreliable. If we can have a better, seamless, integrated solution for things like procure to pay, an end-to-end business process within the military department, and still adhere to the enterprise standards and still be able to provide information to the enterprise, that's a better answer. But there's some if statements in there. There's if statements around the capability of the products that that we've bought. Can they subsume the capabilities that we've built at the enterprise level? There's change management galore associated with that. People really like the systems that they're using now, and are they willing to adopt something that gives you the same capability, if not better, but it's different? Doesn't make it easy, but it's something that we are absolutely looking at with some strong supporters and some strong resistance about whether or not that's the right answer. Nobody wants to take a step back. But in trying to integrate these new modern systems that the military departments are building, to build integration to enterprise systems that may be suboptimal to the overall solution. And so that's something that we're actually very focused on. And there's a big debate in the department as to what the right answer is. But it's a debate that we're having.